Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 268, my conversation with Indian improviser Asad Khan. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why podcast is brought to you by Audible. Sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You get a free audiobook download as well as access to hundreds of books and podcasts. There's so much good stuff. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to sign up and get your Audible account today. Yes But Why podcast is also sponsored by PodcastCadet.com. PodcastCadet.com is the company that my husband and I started to help new podcasters figure out the right path for them. Go to PodcastCadet.com and connect with us. We want to help you start or improve your podcast. Use promo code YBY20 to get 20% off the first service or workshop you buy. Let us help you. PodcastCadet.com. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by True Hemp Science. True Hemp Science is our resource for vegan-friendly whole plant extract CBD oil. Go to TrueHempScience.com now to check out all of the CBD products available to you. Use code YESBUTY7 to get 7% off your order of $50 or more. You get all the therapeutic goodness of CBD, plus you'll get a free packet of two yummy CBD edibles with your order. TrueHempScience.com. This week on Yes But Why, I chat with Asad Khan, founder and artistic director of Creating Humor and Improv Experience. We talk about growing up watching Whose Line Is It Anyway, and Asad tells me about the time he got to have a one-on-one conversation with his improv idol, Colin Mochrie. So fun. There are lots of great stories and laughs in this episode. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 268, Asad Khan on bringing people together to ignite their creativity. Enjoy. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah. When was the first time in your life that you started embracing creative stuff? Were you like doing shows as a little kid, or did you get into it, you know, in school?
So my first exposure to the life of, you know, being on stage was when I used to recite the Indian pledge on the stage on the school assembly. And it was frightening because I sort of had to memorize it at one point and I couldn't, and it was really bad, but I did it anyway. It was fantastic. And the idea of saying something and the entire school is repeating words after me. It's fascinating. I was like, wow, I have power over this. It was crazy. And that was my first exposure on stage. With the pledge thing, but I have been in a lot of school plays. I have done some really silly plays. I have done some really, really idiotic characters. It was really crazy in school, but I have been on stage quite often on stage, and I've always been frightened, but it was amazing.
Yeah. You were frightened from the start. Now, when you mentioned the pledge, did they like pick you to be the one student that sat, that went on stage? Like just randomly, like, okay, you're going to do it.
Not really. The school principal sort of walked into the classroom once and announced that we need someone to read the school pledge. And I don't know why I volunteered. I just wanted to do it. Like, yay, thrill, let's try this.
You did it. You volunteered. Oh, I love that. You know, fear or not, we are like, what we want is what we want, you know?
Yeah.
I love being on stage. It's very exciting for me. And, but I love this idea that you were like, this freaks me out, but I'm going to do it. Let's go. Yeah. Oh, man. So fun. Now, when
in your life did you find improv, or when did you get into like putting on plays? Like, how did that happen?
So there was this one play I was in. It was just a normal, regular play just for the school assembly. And I think it was the story about the bear and the hunter plays dead, and the bear comes to the hunter, sniffs the hunter, and realizes that the hunter is dead, and then just walks away. So I think it was that little story being played out. I was the hunter, and some other guy was the bear. And when I was playing dead on stage, there was this one word in the script that I had absolutely no idea what that meant. Okay. And I just thought, should I ask the teacher or should I just do whatever the hell I want and just understand of the word? And that's what I did. I improvised. And later on, I was told that that's not what it meant. But okay, good job. So that was my first, entry into the world of improv, where I improvise. Like, yeah, we'll see what it means. Who gives a crap?
Yeah, absolutely. You're like, yeah, I mostly know what this stage direction is telling me to do, so I'm going to do this. And they're like, that's not what that means. Yeah.
No.
I love that. That's super funny. I love that your first improvisation is in this play with you and the bear. That is so fun. How did you get into that? Like, were you regularly one of the students that was in the school plays? Did you do them over and over? Was it like when you got to the end of school, was there like one last play and everyone was like, oh my God, guys, this is our final one? Like, were you part of that community, or was it more like just sort of part of the education? And it was like, it's fine.
It was just part of the extracurricular activities that used to happen in school. We didn't have a theater a branch in school where they groom kids to be in the world of theater. They didn't really have that in the school. It was just normal, regular plays that keep happening every now and then. It wasn't really, you know, a serious thing, you know, that was being taught in the school. One interesting story I would like to point out, that I've done some really wacky stuff. And there was this one character that I created back in the day, and I pitched it to the teacher, and teacher is like, yeah, you should go for it. And it was actually a competition, and we were being judged. It was like a 4-person team, a 5-person team, 3-person team, or whatever. And we were being judged, and there was supposed to be a winner and stuff. So I was in a 3-person team, and we basically created that play from scratch as to how it should be. And we had only like 2 minutes to do the whole thing, because that was the time limit for it. So we had to create a scene, and we had to be characters and all that stuff. So the premise of the play was that there's one guy who is trying to buy something, but he cannot buy something because he does not have any change. And the other guy, you know, he's saying, hey, I do not have any change. You need to go out there and find change, because your notes are too big in, denomination. But it's like a $100 bill.
Yeah.
And I'm paying for something in cents. Okay. So that's the best way to describe it. So there are two guys who are just, you know, they are in a transactional scene, and it's not really working out. And the guy is really worried. He's really harassed. He's really confused. Oh my God, what am I supposed to do? I need to buy this thing, and I cannot buy it. And that is when I appear as Change Man. I'm the Change Man. I'm the superhero who goes around, helps people, and offers them change when they don't have any change.
Oh my God, I love it. This was the character that you pitched to your teacher? She was like, yes. Run with this. This is, I wish I had a Change Man myself. She thinks to herself.
Just for some clarity, the play was in the language of Hindi. It wasn't in English. So I wasn't technically Change Man. It is, you know, just for the translation bit.
Sure.
So over here, the word change is translated to chutta. Okay. It actually translates to chutta. So I was chutta man. And the fact, it sounds so absurd. And my entry, I remember, I was wearing my mother's scarf on my back like Superman. And I entered right, I appeared through the curtains, chutta man. And the school went crazy. Everybody went crazy. The teachers went crazy. They couldn't stop laughing as I started clapping. It was one of the biggest applauses I've ever received. And I did a little silly dance as well. I am your man. I am your man. I am chutta man.
I love it. It was so great.
It was so silly. And then I helped the guy out and I'm like, here's your chutta. And then I just flew away. And the guy is like, wow, what would the world be without chutta, man?
Oh my God, I love this scene. This is so wonderful. Tell me you won the acting competition. I'm going to be deeply sad if you did not win.
I did not win. I'm not sure what happened.
Because
I didn't give a shit about anything beyond that. You know, I played chutta man. That's enough for me. And yeah. To this day, you won't believe this. To this day, my school friends, each and every one of them, they still call me chutta man. and I hated it in school. I'm like, don't call me chutta man every time. But I finally embraced it, and now I can see the funny side of it. I was sort of embarrassed by it. Even the teacher started calling me chutta man at one point. It was so chaotic.
Wow. That's like real fame. That's like, you know, when there's a famous actor, you know, people are always going up to them and being like, did you know you're you? And they're like, yeah, yeah, I'm me. So it's crazy. Like, you had that level of fame in your school. People were like, oh my God, this is so great. Oh man, rough though, hard to be the person that gets all that attention when it like freaks you out a little bit, for sure.
I know.
Oh man, so great though. But okay, so you mentioned that like school plays were not that organized and they weren't really like teaching people to be artists. Number one, I'm pretty sure that most people who went to college for it still aren't being taught what they need to know. But as far as acting competition goes, are there multiple competitions for different things during the year? Or is it like a singing competition? Is it all like the arts get to have battle of the bands and whatnot?
There used to be singing competitions. There used to be poetry competitions. There used to be handwriting competitions as well. Oh. So, you know, the students with the best handwriting, they win. And I've won that competition multiple times. I remember because I do have the certificates. I do have the certificates.
Which they made you fill out.
Yeah.
Like, look at how nice that looks.
Yeah. So at this moment, I would like to give a big shout out to my school teacher, who I'm still connected with. She's my English teacher. Her name is Caroline Teacher, Caroline Ribello. I mean, this woman has changed my life entirely. Everything that I know today in the English language is because of her. She's the best English teacher I've ever had. And I'm so eternally grateful that she groomed me to a point where I am able to talk in English to English speaking people with confidence, with proper words being framed and coming out of my mouth.
Oh, wow. Well, shout out to Caroline. Thank you so much, Caroline, for helping out. That's so awesome. I mean, and look at you. You're so like globally connected. Like we were talking before we started recording, like you and I were just sort of like randomly socially connected in an improv group. Like that's fun. Yeah. Like the idea that, you know, we're just sort of hanging out and now we get to talk about art and like our place in it. And, you know, I get to hear about what your experience was. I'm loving the school plays. Shout out to Caroline. Now, was Caroline part of any of the acting? Did she support you in the stage work that you were doing?
Yeah, she was the one who directed this one poem. It was a poem, it was a performance, it was a song. I still remember this clearly. It was a poem written or about Sir Smashham Upe. I don't know if this person exists for real or if it's a real poetry or a sonnet. I'm not entirely sure. But she was the one who taught us all the verses and did all the rehearsals, and we were able to perform this poem in a chorus about Sir Smashham Upe, where there are like maybe 20 people standing in rows, and one section is speaking one line, and the middle section is speaking a line, and the third section is speaking another line, and then there's a chorus about Sir Smashham Upe. And I remember there's this one line, Sir Smashham Upe tore his hair, because that line really stuck with me, and it still stuck with me. That's the only line from that poem that I remember.
Do you like sing it to yourself occasionally? You're like making eggs, and then you're like, pull his hair, and you're like, oh, whoa.
That I genuinely from? Don't remember where it's from, but I'm pretty sure if you Google it, you can find it somewhere.
Wow, so Smashham
Upe. Big shout out to Sir Smashham Upe for tearing his hair.
That's right, man. Get into it. Oh, so funny. So tell me, let's move forward in your life. You know, I'm so excited to give a shout out to your teacher. Love me some teachers, right? Good support. From part of our connection was not just, you know, social on Facebook. It was also finding out that, you know, you are a mentor to other improvisers. So let's get into it. Like, how did you get into the world of being a theatrical mentor to people? I mean, like, you're a creative leader, and you know, how did you move from school plays and performing these really fun sounding songs to being where you are right now?
Right. So when I stepped into college, I was obviously a kid. I don't particularly remember if I was still in school or was I in college. I'm pretty sure I had some knowledge of it when I was in school, but I started watching Whose Line Is It Anyway? All right. That is what made me, you know, crazy about this whole idea of improv. Whose Line Is It Anyway? It used to air randomly on TV. I don't even remember the channel. Every time I knew there was a time slot, I don't remember the time slot even. I used to watch it because it was fascinating to me. Like, how are these guys able to just make jokes up on the spot? It's such a funny show, and they are performing. It's so beautiful to watch, and it's genuinely funny. And at first, I realized I didn't even know that it was not scripted. I thought that it's a totally scripted show. And when it was like wrestling to me, you know, what, wrestling is fake? Tell me, what? Wrestling is not fake. It's real. Undertaker is really a dead man. Okay. That's what I came from when a kid. And then the bubble burst. Like, wow, this show is unscripted as hell. And wow, they are doing it on the spot off the top of their heads. That's impressive. I wish I could be like them. I wish I could do the same things they can, because I've always had this knack of, you know, making jokes on the spot based on the situation I am in. I just have this thing where, and people know this about me, that every time I enter a room in a family gathering or with friends, people know that, okay, things are going to get funny now. So he's going to make fun of people. He's going to make fun of things. He's going to make us laugh. It's just, it was expected. And I knew this because also it's very important for me to make jokes, because as a person, it hurts me when I'm not able to. I just need to get it out of my system. I need to have that release. And when I don't, I really have physical pain. I just feel so much pain that, oh, this is such a missed opportunity. Oh, no, the moment has passed. I should have done this. I should have done that. I have this knack. I really need to get it out of my system. I have paused important discussions just to make a silly joke.
I could not, like, identify with you more. I feel so the same. Like, I have definitely been like, okay, but can we pause this for a second to point out, like, why is he wearing a bow tie? And they're like, yeah, this is a serious situation. And I was like, and he's wearing a bow tie. Yeah. Like, you know, so for sure, I love that kind of stuff. I absolutely. Yeah. I also, by the way, totally identify with the like pain of like if a joke passes and you can't say it, like there are definitely way too inappropriate times to bring up a joke, but you feel it. And then you're like, I'm not saying it. I was like, everyone would be better if I said this, but I can't. All right. Oh, God. So good. So good. I love it. I feel like it's like therapy, though. You have to. You have to. You have this natural skill to release the tension of people, right? Why not do that? I mean, there's so much tension in the world. If you can, like, let them have a moment to enjoy themselves, why not, right? I'm always pro it. When I was a kid, my mom told me I laughed too loud, and I told her, I'll laugh as loud as I want. It's the sound of happiness. And she was like, okay, sheesh, this kid. So I totally feel you about how you're this, like, the release of telling jokes, the like pain of holding them in. Oh man. And I love that you're the funny guy in your family and friend groups that, like, when you walk in, they're like, oh, it's on, we're gonna have a good time. Oh my God, so fun.
It's sort of really controversial being that guy, you know. So people assume that, you know, this person may just make an a really inappropriate joke at the most inappropriate time.
Sure.
And it's not guaranteed whether he'll know where the line is. And maybe some people are just not okay. But, and plus, if you're in a group of 30 people, not everybody would have a sense of humor. Maybe 5 people will laugh, maybe 10 people will, but some of them will go like, that's bad. I hate this guy. Kick him out of this group. Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't care if he's... That's happened to me a lot. I'm a heavily misunderstood person.
Sure.
I always find myself in controversy in such difficult situations, and I sort of enjoy it.
I mean, I also like attention, good or bad.
Honestly, it's less about, it's not at all about the attention. It is just, yes, the comedy was created. The joke happened. The joke, it was made. I said it, that's enough. It was out there in the world. It did not go unaddressed. That is what's more important to me. I don't care if another person would say the same joke that's in my head. As long as the joke is happening, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. There have been many times where other people have made the same jokes that were in my head. And I'm like, thank you so much for doing that. I'm so happy that you exist. Wow. Wow. Let's hang out more.
Yeah. Oh, it got out. Good. That's all I wanted. That I was just making sure everyone was aware of that. Yeah. Oh, man, that's so funny. I'm glad that you've found your people, though. I mean, you have a community where you can do your comedy now. How are you able to find that? You know, it can be hard. You're right, to navigate social situations when you make a joke and maybe people are like, okay, that's more, it's not that kind of place right now. And you're like, all right. But, you know, where did you find the community that let you be who you were? Let you be funny.
Yeah. So back to Whose Line, I was a fan of the show. And this is a very important detail, okay? So when it was on TV, I used to catch random episodes. And it's fine because every episode is a new episode. It didn't matter. You don't have to watch it in a sequence or anything of that sort. But I think it went off air. And for a long time, I didn't watch it or I didn't bother enough to watch it because there were studies, there was, you know, college, and there was, you know, love happening in my life and things that kept me away from Whose Line. But I still knew what the show was. Until when I discovered the wonderful world of downloading illegal torrents on the internet, where everything is available to download, every TV show, every movie. And once I was introduced to that, okay, internet came a little later, high-speed internet came a little later in India. So discovering these things took a little longer than it usually would for the rest of the world. But I still got there. And when I finally did, it was only a matter of time when I typed Whose Line Is It Anyway? And it appeared and I downloaded it. And I had the entire goddamn series on my hard disk. And I could just, you know, watch it on my computer whenever I want to. And I used to watch it back and forth. Like whenever I'm free, I just used to binge it. And I never thought in a million years that I would actually become an improviser, you know. I never thought in a million years that I would actually get the opportunity to be this person, do these things and, you know, stuff like that. So Whose Line was the only improv that I knew, okay? The only improv that I knew. I had no idea about what else is out there in the world of improv. But this was it. Started watching. I was a huge fan. And to this day, I admire and I idolize Colin Mochrie. I just love him so much. I am a huge fan. I will always be. No matter what level I reach in my own career, it is nothing. I do not give a crap. I just need to... He's my idol. He's my everything. I've learned so much from him, from, you know, comic timing to just basic scene work to object work to all these little things that he implements so well, especially with endowments. You know, he's so great with the little things of endowments and the way he speaks. I've spent a long time trying to be him until I realized that, okay, Colin Mochrie just exists. I need to find my own voice. So now I've finally done that. But at first I used to do a lot of, you know, Colin Mochrie stuff. I used to think, what would Colin Mochrie do? But yeah, no disrespect to, Ryan Stiles or Wayne Brady. Anyway, I mean, big fan of the entire cast, but Colin Mochrie, I just relate to the guy way too much.
Oh, that's so great. Man, I bet you he would love to hear that. In fact, I imagine if I understand...
Speaking of which, a few months ago, I had the opportunity to talk to Colin Mochrie on Zoom one-on-one. All thanks to a panel discussion show of a Q&A thing organized by Queen City Comedy out of Charlotte, North Carolina. And I want to thank Carla Dingle for making this happen and Cale Evans for making this happen. They, both of those guys, Cale Evans and Carla Dingle, they made my childhood dream come true. I couldn't believe I spoke one-on-one to Colin Mochrie just on Zoom, and I am asking him things and he's replying to things. He's talking to me and I was stammering all over the place because I had goosebumps. I was shitting bricks. I was like, I can't believe this is happening. And the time zones were crazy. It was 4 a.m. for me over here. Yeah. And so everybody in the room, there were around 20 people in the room, from the community. And I just had one question. Everyone had one question. Everyone was asking random questions to him about this and that. And, you know, what do you feel about this, of the stuff that's happening in the world, and blah, blah, blah. I was the one who basically sort of made him weak in his knees because he felt a little pressured to answer that question. I just straight up point blank asked him, sir, I want to, pursue improv, professionally. I want to become a full-time improviser. I don't want to do anything else in my life. What is the one career advice that you would give me? And he gave me a 5-minute advice that I never thought that I would receive from Colin Mochrie. And I couldn't believe it was happening. He had such wonderful things, such logical things from a business standpoint, from a performer standpoint, from a mental health standpoint. Everything was covered so beautifully. He took the information in and everything that he had to share, he just balled it up in the 5 minute span and he gave it to me. And I was so humbled. I was so thankful that it happened, and it wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Queen City Comedy, Cale Evans and Carla Dingle. And I have to thank them for making this happen. It was just, I will say, it was the greatest moment of my life.
Wow, what a great opportunity. I'm so glad he delivered too. You know, there's a saying, don't meet your heroes, because unfortunately sometimes you meet some people and they're not so nice. But I'm so happy that you had such a great experience with Colin Mochrie. I mean, super sweetheart. I've only heard good things. So yeah. It's so great that you were able to have that. And like, how cool that you were really able to get like solid advice about what that was. Now, this conversation that you were having, you said that there was like an audience. Was your conversation with Colin Mochrie an event for people to watch as a conversation between two improvisers?
Yeah. So the free tickets to this event was only for the. It was only for the people who perform improv. So there were only 20 people in the Zoom meeting room. I think it was 20. And all of them got to ask a question. However, the Zoom meeting was streamed live on Facebook on the Queen City Comedy page for everybody to see.
Oh, wow. Awesome. So cool.
Yeah, it was crazy. I'm pretty sure not just me, but every person in that room with their own individual questions, they were just completely blown away with the amount of knowledge that Colin Mochrie shared on that panel. And he was so helpful and so insightful. And he's just such a sweet guy. I was stammering all over the place. It was just a one-line question. I took 2 minutes to even ask the question. I was so nervous. And I told him that I'm sorry that I'm stammering. It's just that I'm too overwhelmed by your presence. He's like, hey, it's fine. Don't worry about it. I have that effect on people. Yes. I never needed a generic response from people. Usually say, yeah, that's fine, you stammer, that's fine, that's totally fine. He gave me the greatest response ever. He's like, yes, I have that effect on people.
Oh man, he yes anded you so well in that moment. So perfect.
Absolutely.
Oh my goodness, that's so great. And just to even step back from this amazing experience of talking to Colin Mochrie, the beginning of the story is you're on a panel with Queen City Comedy out of North Carolina. Again, yeah. I'll bring it back. You are so well connected. You are like such an important part of the improv community globally. Like you're into it. Number one, also, like, I know you wouldn't think it because you're you, but like, also pretty cool for Colin Mochrie to meet you. Like, I don't know. In my opinion, I mean, I was excited to get to meet you today. So the idea that it's like, you know, when I'm sure there's improv news that he's aware of and what's going on, you know, if he sees your name again, he's like, oh yeah, all right, this is my pal. Oh, I know this guy. Yeah. He tells his friends, oh, look at him. He's doing great.
I got the opportunity to talk to Asad Khan. How about that?
That's right. Did you guys hear about that? He's on a podcast right now telling a story about how impressed he was when he got to talk to you. So it's great. It's like a thing.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So let's get into your like current comedy situation. You're like I said, you're well connected. You're an important person in the community. You're a mentor to a lot of people. How is your, how does it work for you? Do you have a theater? Do you have a space? What is your, how are you enacting the business advice that Colin gave you?
Well, to be completely honest, India, not they, we do not have an improv scene over here. Like, it's almost non-existent. People have only recently started to accept stand-up comedy as a performance art where people would pay money to go see comedians, you know, perform jokes and, you know, do some comedy. So improv comedy, they don't really consider it because they, first of all, don't know how it works. First of all. Second, they don't find it entirely funny because they don't understand it as to what is happening mostly. I mean, improv shows, sure. But if I had the opportunity as a fan, I would go to a stand-up comedy show because, you know, that's comedy. People don't even realize that improv can also... It is a part of comedy. There's sketch comedy. There's so many different wings of comedy. And it is not just limited to stand-up. But I'm just glad that stand-up is picking up because it was down in a puddle. I mean, it was like... it was not good. But finally, it is picking up. There is a scene of open mics happening around the city. And there are so many great comedians that have come out. And one of the great comedians that came out, her name is Kanis Surka. And she is one of the biggest comedians in she's one of the biggest comedians in India. And she is the one who taught me improv. I learned improv through her, and she is predominantly a improviser. But when she is originally from South Africa, and she moved to India, and she started performing improv here with there's a company called Improv Comedy Mumbai. She started performing with them. And I'm pretty sure she soon realized that there is no market for improv here. It's not going to be that great here. So let's just become a stand-up comedian. So now she focuses more on stand-up comedy. But she still has a soft corner for improv. And that's what happened. That's my story. Once she just decided that she wants to conduct an improv, a basics of improv workshop, and I saw it because I was following her. I saw it that, okay, this is an opportunity in my life to actually learn. Can this be learned? Aren't you just born with this skill? How can you learn this thing? I didn't know still. So like, okay, she's teaching improv. Maybe I can learn how they are doing the things that they're doing on Whose Line. So let's try this. It was a pretty expensive workshop. I had to think a lot about it because she's Kanis Surka. And it was a 2-day, full day intensive thing. It started at 10 o'clock. It ended at 6 o'clock in the evening. It included lunch as well. And it was crazy. It was actually a 3-day, Friday evening, Saturday and Sunday, 3 days I was. And you need to realize that still in this moment, I was still just a fan. Okay, I was still a fan of Kanis Surka. I was still just a fan of comedy in general. I didn't think that I'm getting to learn improv. I'm like, wow, I'm getting to meet my favorite comedian. And wow, I'm getting to learn improv. And I walked into the workshop and I'm like, wow, that's Kanis Surka sitting right there. And I'm just, you know, 10 feet away from her. And then suddenly, I was completely blown away. The door opens and Zakir Khan walks in. Okay. There's Zakir Khan. Now, about Zakir Khan, he is, well, it's sort of a controversial statement, but he is sort of the biggest stand-up comedian in India, okay? He is like legitimately the most famous. I mean, there are plenty of others who can be classified as the best comedians in India. But this guy is, okay, let's just say that he's pretty damn famous, okay? And people love him and he has a lot of followers and all that stuff. He just walks in and I'm like, oh my God, what is happening? There's Kanis Surka and I'm about to learn improv and Zakir Khan just walked in, the best stand-up comedian that I know, and I'm a huge fan of this guy as well. Goosebumps. I was just being blown away. I just didn't know what is happening. And then it was announced that Zakir Khan is going to be part of this workshop, and he's just going to be a fellow student. So I just went from okay, until yesterday I was just admiring him through his work that he has done, and I'm just completely in awe of how funny he is. And today I'm just hanging out with the guy. I'm just hanging out with Zakir Khan. I'm just hanging out with the queen of improv, Kaniz Surka. I'm just hanging out with these people, and they are just so friendly and cool. And she's teaching me everything about yes, and she's teaching me everything about scene, the you know, adding information and storytelling and stuff like that. I'm like, wow, I just cannot believe all of this is happening to me. I was just laying in bed until yesterday, doing nothing, wasting my life away. And today I'm doing this. And I had amazing. A lot of fun in that.
So yeah. Amazing.
I had a lot of fun in that workshop. It was so memorable. It was so memorable. And speaking of that workshop, there was a showcase at the end of the workshop. On Sunday, it was a showcase. The last day of the workshop started at 10 in the morning. It ended around 7 p.m. in the evening, and the show was at 8. Okay. And in that show, so what Kaniz did was we had 12 people in the batch in total. So, and it was the basics of improv, so only short form stuff. All right. She put everybody in just really short form games and stuff like that. She put me in questions only, all right? And she put me in questions only because maybe she observed that this beginner is just good at asking questions. So let's just put him in that game. So she put me in that game. And when the show started, I was like, okay, let's do this. I was the first person. So there are like two people on the opposite ends. And you just walk into the scene for questions only. And on this end, it's me who is first. On the other end, it's Zakir Khan. Okay. So on stage, the first time I'm performing a real comedy show in front of a live audience of around 100 people. Okay. There were 100 people in the audience. That was that kind of a showcase. And I am sharing the stage with Zakir Khan, with Kaniz Surka just standing right there. As a fan, this was a wet dream. Okay. So we just took a suggestion of a place and we just started the scene. Basics of improv, beginner, doesn't know much about endowment and stuff like that. I asked him, where are you going? And he's like, who are you? You know, because it is, you know, questions only. Where are you going? And who are you? And I replied to Zakir Khan, have you forgotten me, father? And in that moment, I endowed him as father. But it was so funny for the audience because they hadn't seen anything like that, you know, happening on stage because it was improv and nobody has really seen it. It was just a very silly thing that someone said. And I bought the house down and there was such a loud laughter. People were laughing all over the place. And I'm like, did I say something wrong? What did I do? Are they laughing at me or are they laughing at the thing that I just said? I'm like, okay, this happened. People are laughing and I'm scared. I'm really scared. And he asked a question. Zakir Khan asked a question and I didn't have a response to that. I froze because I was taking it all in. People are laughing at me. I said something. People are laughing at me. They're going crazy. I am completely blank in my head right now. And I got disqualified because I didn't have a question.
Oh,
so I was kidding.
Oh.
That's fine. Because that was the moment for me. I was freezing when I went back to the line. And then the whole question only continued. But it was fine because for me, I got kicked out by Zakir Khan. So it's fine for me. I didn't want to be the person who kicks out Zakir Khan, you know. I have that kind of humility. Yeah. So, yeah, that was the first big applause and one of the best. I would say it was the best moment for me on stage because it was the first.
Wow. What a huge thing to have happen. Like, oh my God, that's unbelievable. You're like, I'll just take this improv workshop. No big deal. I am going to see this person that I really like. And then all of a sudden, everyone's your like favorite comedians everywhere. What great opportunity and so fun. Oh man. Oh, so cool. What a great story. Thank you for sharing that. You know, it makes me think about this. You mentioned that the audience was like, I don't even know what to make of this, and how improv is kind of like not quite understood. That's worldwide, by the way. People all over are like, wait, what do you do? I don't understand. I mean, like, I've taught 8-week courses to people where they don't really get it. So yeah, I mean, it's a tough kind of scenario to figure this out. So good on the crowd to get 100 people for that showcase. Like
it's sad. It's really tough. It's really sad for people just don't understanding what improv is. How hard is it? I've clarified this various times. I'm an improv comedian. People still refer to me as a stand-up comedian. Oh, Asad, yeah, he does great stand-up. I'm like, no, I don't do stand-up.
Yep.
I don't do that. I'm an improv comedian. Oh, yeah, improv. And they can't even say the words correctly. Some people still write improve, which is sad.
Well,
on so many levels. Hey, Asad, why don't you just improve? I'm trying, okay? I'm trying to improve. Don't rub it in my head. Don't rub it in my face.
No, it's their autocorrect. It's not them. It auto-corrects on my every blurb I write, every episode post I write. I have to edit out about 6 improves for sure.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, don't do it. So I want to jump in because we've been chatting and we've been like having rock and roll and having a great conversation about your journey and what a journey it has been. Oh my God. But I want to talk about something that we talked about before we got to recording, which is the idea of improv as an unregulated art. When I originally brought it up, you were like, yeah, I totally want to talk about this. To start, I want to present the idea that I like improv because there are a bunch of different ways to do it. And there's no one currently, there's no like group or organization that's currently telling us what the right way to do it is, right? So you've mentioned short form with Whose Line and this particular workshop that you took, but I know that you perform other kinds of improv and that there are other kinds of improv all over, all sorts of stuff. Even the idea that you've done comedy is almost unusual for what I've heard. Most of my friends and connections in Europe are doing dramatic improv, right? So I'm like, oh, cool, comedy. Yeah, let's talk about comedy. But so tell me, what do you think about the state of improv and how so many possible ways to do it? Tell me what you think.
There are so many different ways. There's so much to improv. It is, you know, I like to say this about improv. You know, improv is like the expanse of the universe. It just keeps on expanding. And the more you expand in an improv scene, the better the scene gets. It is just like that. Improv just keeps getting better. There is no final, final level that you can reach. You can always learn something new. There is no way anybody could ever be entirely educated on how to do improv, how to perform improv. There's no one single way to perform it. There's no one single school of thought. I've had so many teachers. First, the teachers would tell me, don't ask questions, okay? Like, okay, I will not ask questions. Hey, listen, it's totally okay to ask questions, all right? Okay, I'll listen to you then. And then someone would say something like, hey, look, you should always say yes and, okay? All right, I'll say yes to everything. Hey, don't say yes to everything, okay? You can say no. Okay, so many different thoughts. Some people like, try finding the game of the scene. It's really fun. It's great. You find the game of the scene, it's good. Okay, I'll do that. Hey, don't go for the game. Let it evolve naturally. If you try to force it, you'll fall flat on your face. Okay, so many things are happening. What do I do? All right, Another thing, bring out every character, be wacky, be someone who is out of this world, something so larger than life that people are impressed. I'm like, yes, let's do that. And the other one, let's focus on you being a little grounded. You know, you need to be a little grounded. Just calm down and, you know, just stay calm and, you know, just be natural and just be real and true to yourself. Yes, that's good. That works for me. That's great stuff. All of these things are not problems. They are just styles. They are just so many different avenues, I would say, of improv on as to how you can perform this wonderful art. There are so many different ways. I mean, if I want to be grounded, I will be grounded in this scene. If I want to be a outrageous character, I will be that. It all depends on how I'm feeling in that moment. You know, if I want to find the game, I'll do it. If I don't want, if I want to ignore something seriously unusual, I will ignore it. I will not chase the game. If I want to say no, I'll say no for my own safety. If I want to say yes, I would yes and it hard because that's good. It all depends on how I like to perform, how I want to perform, how I want to go about with this. So all these, improv is just ever expanding and so many things to learn. And it's a damn shame that we don't have this kind of education over here in India. There's only two things that you can learn basically, and all of the other things are self-learned through your own groups by making Google searches and, you know, maybe educating yourself through your own group. There's no real coaching happening. There's no real curriculum. There's no syllabus. There's no themed workshops as to let's focus on this, let's do that. It doesn't happen here. People just teach improv here, the basics of improv. They just introduce you to the basics of long form, and that's about it. The worst part is that the people who attend the workshops, oh my God, I have such a big problem with this. People who attend these workshops, they do this just because improv is such a great stress buster. I'm like, go to hell with that. Just pack up your things and go to hell. That's what I personally feel about it. Like, if you're okay, fine, you're taking a workshop, fine, you don't want to perform it, it's fine. It's totally fine. 90% of the people, 95% of the people here just take up workshops, have a good time. They don't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And they don't want to be performers. That's the situation here over here in India. 5% of them, the remaining 5%, for 3% of them would who actually like improv so much that they want to do something about it. They will go to these paid improv jams where you pay to perform. These events are for improvisers by improvisers. So only improvisers are sitting in the audience, and it's basically an open stage, and you pay to perform over there. They will, you know, go there, hang out maybe once or twice a month, and you know, feel good that, hey, I did a show, I was on stage, this was my stage time, I earned it. And they would just, you know, go back home and just keep attending jams. There's a rare 2%, and I belong to that rare 2%, who actually do something about the whole improv thing. And I'm glad that I did that. Immediately, I understood what the scene is right after I learned improv. I immediately understood what the scene is like in my city. Okay, there are paid jams. Okay, the improv groups that still exist, they are putting on shows maybe once every 3 months or so. But the culture is just of paid improv jams. What is that going to accomplish? I want to do this. I loved my time in the workshop. This has been, enlightening. This has been so wonderful. I want to do something. I don't want to waste this. I do not want to waste this opportunity that I learned something so great. And I have this knack of making jokes on the spot. I want to be a comedian and I have no interest in stand-up comedy. And people have been eating my head. Asad, just get into comedy. You are made for it. You should do this. You should do that. You are so funny, blah, 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 etc. And I'm like, no, I don't want to get into stand-up comedy because I used to feel that there is only this one style of comedy. I never thought that improv would actually... I thought improv would... It is just a TV show. It happens just on Whose Line. I never thought that all of this, you know, groups and improv workshops and it can even be learned or, you know, stuff like that. So I had this option. I wanted to do something about it. And I did something that only few people do. I created my own stage time. I created my own show. I created my own group. I learned a lot about stuff that happens, you know, the culture within groups, all the problems that you know, that exist in each and every group. I've been through it all. It's been fascinating. It's been amazing to say, you know, it's been amazing. But yeah. So yeah, I created my own show. My show is called Creating Humor because that's what I do. It's creating humor and improv experience. That's the show name. I like to create humor. And that is literally what's being done. Creating humor out of nothing. I thought, hey, that's a clever name. Very well done. Great thought you had at 3 in the morning that night. So I created my own show. I started off very easy. I just got a bunch of friends. Like, hey, I learned this. I have these few people that I've met. Just attend this show that I'm doing. It is a style of comedy that you have never seen before. And around 30 people were there. They were actually sitting on the floor. It was a very small cafe. They're actually sitting on the floor. And that was my first show. It was a free show. I didn't even want to charge those people for it. It was a short form show. I had so much fun. People were going crazy, laughing their heads off. It was so insane. And that is when I realized, okay, I need to do this. I want to do this more and more. I just want to do this. And one thing led to another, show after show. Then I got exposed to education, learning, with my mistakes that I did, with the good things that I did, which were not cherished, which were not, you know, appreciated, and which were basically came back to bite me in my ass. I don't have a problem saying that. It happens. So I am where I am today because of those experiences, and I'm glad everybody that walked into my life, they do walk in for a reason, and they walk out for a reason as well. So thank you for that, and I'm glad where I am today. I'm very happy. Today I am the producer, the founder, the producer, and the artistic director of Creating Humor and Improv Experience. And it makes me really happy that I am in that position, and I'm doing great things for, you know, yeah, putting on great shows and stuff. So that's
how are you mining for performers now? Are you like looking around to see who else is interested in your area, or is it all global connections that you're building your casts from?
I do have a local Mumbai based group here, so big shout out to my team members, because obviously why not, Ramin Charania, Lindsay Rosario, Rajiv Singh, and Gia Sethi as well. So all these people. So the idea of creating humor is that I quickly realized that, okay, improv troupes are large. They are at least 5 people, 7 people sometimes. And if it all boils down to availability and, you know, commitment, and people are afraid of commitments, they have, you know, real other priorities. People are not crazy enough as I am. They are not able to make time. And if one person is not able to make time, the entire group gets affected. And then the rehearsals don't happen. And then the shows don't happen. And that is why they are only able to produce, they're only able to produce one show, like in 3 months or 4 months. That's really sad. With Creating Humor, my intention was that there is a pool of improvisers, say around 10 people. And at any point, if I need 5 people, 6 people, 7 people, I just announced to the group that, hey, we are doing a show. Whoever is available, this is the commitment that is needed. If you're available, say yes. If no, the show will go on without you. Everyone was clear with that. I was clear with that. And to this day, the culture has been the same. If you can't commit to that, it's fine. The show will go on without you. And the people don't have a problem with it that, okay, maybe in a culture, okay, I'm not available. Maybe they're doing a show. I'm feeling bad about it. I'm feeling left out. They still do, obviously, because they're not able to make time for the show. And they wish that they could be on the show. But the guidelines are clear from the very start, from the very beginning. So
they're professional about it.
Absolutely. And rightfully so, because I have been a part of every Creating Humor show. But not everybody has been a part of every Creating Humor show.
So I feel you. That's great.
I'm the face. I'm the face, and I'm also the ass of the Creating Humor shows.
Oh, great. Nice. Yeah, so, they see you when you walk in. They see you when you walk away. All right, great. I love it.
Absolutely. 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 Great how that worked out. I'm so proud of you, Amy.
Yeah. I love it. So you're so this is a great group. I think everything you've said so far has been like just salient points about like how, like, you know, managing expectations when you're running a community, when you are putting rehearsals together. Like you're I love this idea of having a larger pool that you can pull from to have a smaller group on stage. Like that's awesome and smart. And if you're listening to this, like that could be a great way to for you to get more done, because sometimes people aren't busy, and that's okay. And we can't like harass each other for our like lives, so why not that's just true. Have a few people around so that you can set it up and it'll all work out, and then no hard feelings. That's really smart.
I've done shows with 7 people. I've done shows with 6 people. I've done shows with 5. I've done shows with 4 people as well for Creating Humor. It's fine. This show will go on without you. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
It's not a problem. That's how it was supposed to be.
Plus, so like, you know, it's an improv show. It exists in the moment. It's like there, you know, it's a momentary experience that we all get to have together, and then it's gone. So it's okay. You know, you had to continue working at your job. They like it when you stay. Or, you know, you had to go take care of your mom. She had to, you had to drive her somewhere. Both of those things, totally valid. You don't have to feel bad, right? I mean, that's the other thing about like, the weird thing about being a performer and trying to be professional about it is people feel bad for the silliest things. They're like, oh, I'm really sorry I had to work. I was like, well, you know, people like jobs. They like to keep that. So don't feel bad. You have a life. Like, it's all good. Great. But you have a great community. I've heard such great things about your team and the show that you put on. Now, just to sort of finalize, because we've been talking for like an hour. It's been like so cool. I'm so excited. You've been an excellent interviewee. But one thing, the last thing I wanted to ask you about was, what's the creative thing that you're excited about right now? Like, what's the thing that you're just like, that you're thinking about? And it can be a show that you're working on or a group, or even if, like, you know, you're just like, listen, I'm making birdhouses and I am great at it. You know, like, it's fine. Whatever. What's the thing that's exciting you right now?
Well, I've received a lot of education online. Okay. I've learned various things that I was completely unaware of. And it feels like 2 years for some reason, but it's not. It's a little over 1 year. It feels like 2 years. 2020 and 2021, it has been life-changing. The great quality of education that I received. I want to implement that in the real world, because I haven't gotten a chance to implement that into the real world. So I want to do that. I want to groom the rest of my team. I want to work with people. I want to coach them. I want to spread the education to my team mates and just people within the community in general. It's like, I just want to be the guy who just, you know, does great things for improv. And me as a person, I'm all about shows. I just want to do shows. It needs to happen. The show must go on. I'm just absolutely crazy about that. Sometimes they think, yeah, this guy's crazy. He's absolutely lost it if he's thinking it's too many shows. But I do understand what too many shows is. And so I've had weekly shows as well, and I realized that weekly shows are tough to sell. So let's put it in the back burner. Let's stick to a more relaxed schedule. So yeah, I've learned that. And a show, a concept, I'm all about shows. I'm all about formats. I'm all about concept, themes, everything. I want to try stuff that has not been tried over here in the local improv scene. So the stuff that people have seen, they are not very accepting of long form, okay? Because they expect comedy, and maybe in long form, the comedy does not come that often, you know, unless it is done exceptionally well. Maybe if you're TJ and Dave, you will be able to do that. But it is not as widely accepted as short form, because short form works like snap of a finger, the comedy is coming left, right, it's a throughout, it's a nice show. People are not particularly accepting of it. So I want to, you know, do something about that where you can mix it up and make it feel as if it's a short form show, but technically it's not. They don't know how short form is. They're just here to watch an improv show. They expect the amount of laughs that they get at the stand-up comedy show to be the same in improv shows, and when that doesn't happen, they don't return to improv shows, which is quite pathetic, to be honest. But they need to be served comedy. We cannot really promote it as improv comedy and do improvised theater. That doesn't make sense, because that's basically scamming people out of their money. And as long as you're promoting it as a comedy show, the comedy needs to happen. So in my head, the only way out of this is to have a lot of gimmicks and stuff that has not happened, like cage matches and theater sports, or various formats that have existed in the West but have not made their way over here. You know, in particular, maybe it has been tried unofficially without licenses. I'm not sure. I'm no one to speak, but I would definitely get the licenses, and I would perform them. I would have those shows. I do have a lot of concept shows in my mind, and I'm very comfortable revealing this. So over here, I do want to do a show which is entirely narrative. I want to do a show which is basically a director's cut, and the director, you know, just directs things, and the scenes are being played out. And I also want to do a show which is, you know, director versus the audience. So the audience is also sort of the director. But technically, I am still the director. I am directing the audience when to direct, basically, and how to direct. So I am directing, and the audience is directing. Audience was the director. It is a gimmick where the audience feels that it is that way, but it's not technically. I go to the audience for some stuff, and then the audience will come back to the performers and stuff like that. There is also Choose Your Own Adventure, which is a format I am really excited to do on stage, because audience is in. They think that they are in great control, but technically they aren't. Sort of they are, but they aren't. We are still in control of it. It's like magic, you know. So when the magician performs a trick, he is always in control, but the spectator feels that they are in control. That's what the illusion is, and that's what the illusion I want to duplicate on stage. And a lot of formats in my head that I want to do. It's just sad that I can't do it immediately, but hopefully soon.
Yeah, man, hopefully soon we'll be able to start doing more, you know, live on stage stuff, because that sounds like, man, the people who are interested in your town, they're gonna be so excited. Not only the audience members, but the performers, to be like, what ideas do you have? Okay, I'll try it. Like, that's so great. Oh man,
there is one question that you asked me that I didn't entirely address. For me, I only want to limit myself to being a director, or at best a coach to the people that I'm performing with. I do not want to, well, not as of yet, but I'm pretty sure about it, that I do not want to be a teacher. Okay, I do not want to teach improv to other people. One, because I don't particularly have a good amount of patience. One, I don't think, I don't think I'll be good around students. That's one. But second is that I have this belief system because there are way too many improv teachers in the world. Okay, way too many improv teachers in the world. And I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but I'm not going to drop any names, but I have interacted with several people who cannot improvise their way out of anything. They are terrible, absolutely terrible. They suck at basics. They just don't get it right. They are just awful. This is absolutely awful. And they are teaching improv. And I'm like, why is this happening? This needs to be governed. And the only, it needs to be regulated a bit as to a way where people just don't wake up in the morning one day and decide, hey, I'm an improv teacher now. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to teach. It's fine. I mean, if you want to teach, that's great. But there should be some regulation as to what the quality of education the said teacher is bringing to the table. Mm. One, and if the teacher is qualified enough to teach, that's one very important factor. I personally wouldn't ever go to a class for those people who I know for a fact are absolutely horrible at this. Are just genuinely terrible at this, and they are teaching, they are pretending to teach, and people are actually learning from these people. I don't know what they are teaching, because if you are teaching them the right things, then you are not implementing those right things into your own performance, which is really terrible. So my idea, the thought in my head, I've spoken to various people about this, is that there should be a regulatory body where teachers can go and sign themselves up and basically be qualified, and that body can basically make sure that these people are qualified enough to teach. And for this, I have a name for this organization. We can call it the Ministry of Improv.
That's the Ministry of Improv.
I mean, it's just a shitty name, but
I like it.
It is just the Ministry of Improv. And what's happening is that they are regulating the whole improv scene throughout the world, and people are going there. So, the Zumba instructors, they do have a regulatory body, and they are certified from that regulatory body. So the Zumba instructors that are affiliated, that are certified, from that body, they have it in their resume that I'm a certified instructor. Okay, I'm not just anybody. I'm a certified instructor. Yeah. That organization has certified me to do this, and people who want to learn Zumba, they find it appealing. Like, wow. This person is certified. That body has certified this person. Maybe this person is truly great at what they do. If they had the option of learning from someone, Zumba from someone who is not certified, as to someone who is certified, they will go with the certified person. That's just human psyche. That is just human psyche.
Yeah.
So if there could be a body who is regulating the stuff, there could just be a little test, just a little audition for teachers. It's fine. Just no matter what it is, just do it. Because I'm so tired of having so many teachers just wake up in the morning and decide, hey, I'm going to be a teacher now. It's not something that you can declare. You know, for me personally, I feel that only an improv teacher, a legitimate improv teacher who is good, can anoint another person as an improv teacher. Like, like knighthood. Only a knight can anoint another knight. It cannot be done otherwise.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to have a sword into the mixture, we can have a sword where the teacher is, placing a sword over the head of the other teacher. I'm fine with that.
Sure. That seems right. That seems good. You know, the point that you're making, though, is pretty strong. If only just because, you think about other industries, you wouldn't go to an unlicensed plumber. You know what I mean? There are people who learn how pipes work, and they know what to do, and they get a license, and they have to do this education,
I will say this. You do not pay the plumber to bang on the pipes. You pay the plumber to, because he knows where to bang.
And yeah!
That happens when you learn the craft, when you are a licensed person. You are a certified person.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
You know, I think it's interesting. I think that that's definitely a great goal to work toward, especially since, you know, as we talked about earlier, now because of the prevalence of Zoom, we are more connected as a unified, like, global community. Like, I've talked to improv teachers on every continent, not Antarctica. Mm-hmm. They're hard to get. But, but like every other, I'm trying to talk to people all over. I'm just interested in how they do it and the journey of it. And like hearing your stories about like the way your city is set up. I'm like, oh, I totally understand. Like, I know a few cities that are like that. And, but that idea is like so good to connect. But why not? I mean, now that we're all talking, now that we are all, you know, everybody from that are like top level in all the major cities can be like, okay, let's get together. I mean, even if, like you mentioned with your references, it could be like a small, you know, like a city to city thing. There's a city council who's in charge of it in your area, or just a region. You know what I mean? Like, maybe it's like, you know, the western half of the U.S. is all this group and the eastern half is this group, and they make sure that people are legit. And, you know, I wonder, too, if it would help with some of the, because sometimes people are starting theaters and being improv teachers purely in a predatory kind of way, like in a, I can get people to come, like in a culty, like, oh, how do I collect people? Oh, yeah, I'll get them together this way and take advantage of them in whatever way. You know, perhaps if there was sort of a regulatory body, they could stop that, where it's like they talk to someone, they check them out, do a little background check, and they're like, I feel like this guy is not really in it for the improv. I feel like he's in it for the collections of 20-year-old girls that he's going to spend time with.
For the
like,
money.
Oh, for the money. Just the money. The money. Oh, yeah. The so money. Much money.
Workshops are Workshops are so expensive. Improvisers are so gullible. They would pay for any workshop, any class there is out there. I will attend that class because I like that person. Oh, that person is suddenly teaching now. I'm going to go quickly run towards that workshop.
Honest to goodness, though, with my clearly American respect for the hardy capitalism that is overcharged for everything, I'm like, hey, man, if you're an improv teacher and you're really rich from being an improv teacher, you need to teach a different kind of workshop, and it's about business. But you're right. I mean, one thing I have seen recently is some egalitarian pricing, such that it's like we're teaching globally. So it's like, I don't know how much makes sense to you. So this is the product that I want to ally with the workshop. What would you pay for that product where you live? And then it's like not, you know, it's not insane.
That is such an important conversation to have about there being various different, price modules for workshops. Because believe me, I have seen workshops which are definitely worth so good. I want to attend those workshops, but it is just sad that I cannot afford them. Why? Because that is my entire month's salary. I cannot afford an entire month of my salary, of my income, to go to just one workshop. Mm-mm. That is just how strange the world works. America and Europe and, UK, the value of money is just too high. And in India, it is just too low. So I cannot afford that. Thankfully enough, a lot of change has been, developed. And big shout out to Queen City Comedy. They have been doing... By the way, Queen City Comedy is a non-profit organization. They don't do this for the money. They only do it for improv. And they are doing some excellent work, absolutely phenomenal work with the stuff that they're doing, with the classes, with the shows, with the opportunities they are giving people, the scholarships they are handing out to people, just because people cannot afford them. It is mind-blowing stuff. And not just Queen City, it is slowly, gradually growing towards every class where there are at least two spots reserved for people who are from underprivileged backgrounds. And I can say for a fact that I'm from a very underprivileged background. So I cannot afford those expensive workshops like at all. And I'm glad that there are things like this that and such great people in the community that they understand this thing that, okay, it's really unfair to charge this guy that amount of money. So if I had I'm fine with paying thousands of dollars for a workshop that is absolutely worth it. Okay, absolutely worth it. If the teacher is like, wow, I need to learn from this teacher, genuine, legitimate teacher who I am completely blown away by just by looking at the work, and I know for a fact that they're going to help me in my career, I have no problem paying that much, you know, for that workshop. But if you're just and you're charging amount like, I'm going to charge that much. No, I'm not going to do that. No, that's just a waste of money. That's just a waste of my time. And frankly, I don't think you should be teaching other people as well. Where's the regulatory body? I'm going to launch an official complaint and, you know, kick you out of here.
Yeah, right. Interesting. Great. These are some great ideas. And, you know, as improv grows globally and as the communities connect with one another, I think that this time that we've been forced to be off stage, it has actually been helpful because there's been a lot of work done on the paperwork side, the business side, the like, okay, we were not running, you know, we weren't making enough money, or this thing, this part of the community didn't like this, or whatever didn't work in each individual theater. I feel like the people that stayed open are really working to improve and to be better. And I see people talking to each other across all sorts of disciplines. I was reading a thread just on Facebook the other day of like two people that I know that run theaters in different states, and they were discussing different ways that they could do like certain HR forms. Like, how do we make sure the community is taken care of and protected? Like, and I was like, what a great conversation this is. Like, yeah. People are working together to like find out how they can make a better experience for their audience, for their community, for the people that work for them. And they're like actively using this time that we can't be doing the art that we love to do to improve the business that is art. And I really think, I mean, yeah, sure. Are people going to be jerks all over and do terrible things? Yeah, that's probably going to happen. But my hope is that the bulk of artists who I truly believe have more empathy than other people, like creativity as a main effort in your like self, I think tends to make you more empathetic, if only just because as an artist, you're often looking at other people to get character stuff. And so you're like, I'm not going to judge them because I like want to understand why they're doing X, Y, Z, right? Yeah. But I think that the art community across the world is improving itself, and that maybe in the future, we might be able to really know that people are certified and that teachers are, you know, like really legitimately care about you and have knowledge and like are worth the money in the future. So these are great ideas. And I think that you could, I mean, all of us talking about this, I think the more we talk about it, the more we make actions to do it, the better it can be.
Yeah. The one thing that I obviously had in mind is the regulatory body is it needs to be have this it needs to be that this person needs to maintain a safe space in their classes, and the idea of a safe space is very important. I've loved this idea of a safe space where people do not be judged, they do not have to fear, they feel protected. Okay. Like you said, anything can happen. People can still be judged. People can still be jerks, right? And even if you are in a safe space, if you are a teacher and you've created a safe space for 20 people, there's one jerk who is just, you know, maybe crossing a line. You cannot anticipate that happening. You have made the rules, but you cannot. If it happens, then it's not a safe space anymore. So I would like to give a big shout out to Stephen Davidson of the UK. His company is Impromiscus. He is one of my teachers, and he has introduced the idea of a held space. It is a held space. It is not a safe space. It is a held space. And it makes so much more sense where if you have a problem with something, it is going to be taken care of. But if you find yourself in a situation where you don't feel safe, you cannot blame the person organizing the space for you. Because there have been a lot of times where people have said some mean things, they've been assholes, and they straight away judge the space being not safe enough. So the right way, I feel his idea of a held space is very good. That's one thing. And I mean, I just have so many connections that I've made. I just want to name drop left and right people all over the place. Is that okay?
Sure.
There's so many people, so many people coming to my mind, and not just with regards to safe space, just the great work that they have been doing, spreading the spreading the information, the education, all of those things, and also offering scholarships, and also offering so many opportunities for shows and opportunities to learn throughout the world. It's phenomenal stuff. Queen City Comedy, there is Zigzag Improv International, led by Sandra Lynn Jones. There are so many great teachers. Jay Suko is one of them. John Noyan is one of them. Hari Vitoler of ImproNerf, I love that guy. He is one of them. Big shout out to David Riley Postansky of Extreme Improv. He has this brand of Extreme Improv. Now just imagine regular short form games. They have an added twist where the games get extreme. As if improv was not extreme enough already, but it is extreme now. You are only allowed to speak in single syllables, and intentionally you are only allowed to make statements. You cannot answer questions. You cannot make questions. And if you're in a scene and someone tells you statements only, you get frozen. It's because it messes with your head a little bit. Like, okay, I have to make statement. I have to think now. Is that a statement? It gets really extreme. big shout out to, since the beginning of 2020, David Riley Postansky has created so many opportunities. Believe this, Amy. Every Wednesday, every Thursday, every Friday, 3 days of the week, he has shows streaming live on multiple platforms: Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, DLive, Twitter, OnlyFans, and all those places. He has a streaming everywhere, and he has been conducting this for the last more than one year. So many people have benefited from him. So many people have learned so many great things just being on the Extreme Improv shows. It's all free. He doesn't charge a single rupee. He doesn't charge a single rupee, I was about to say, because that's the currency in India. Yeah. I wouldn't say dollars. He doesn't charge anything. He does it so selflessly. And he's just one guy running this chaos. He has long form shows, he has short form shows. It's magnificent. And I'm proud to say that I am in a duo with him, international duo with him. And so what has happened is my brand has, fornicated with his brand, basically. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. We gave birth. So my brand is Creating Humor. His brand is Extreme Improv. And we together gave birth to Creating Extreme Humor.
Ah, nice.
That's what has happened. We have a duo show. We've done three shows. We've done three shows online. But I can't wait to get back to the real world and just, meet the guy and just go crazy with him, because I'm really, really looking forward to working with him in person. Aww. I am in two online. It just hit me. I am in way too many duos, just by the way. Way too many duos. So I have two online duos. I have one real world duo. I have my own show, Creating Humor. I'm just going to say this, okay? First and foremost, the whole Creating Humor thing. Second, I'm a part of this duo called The Bromantic Duo. Yeah. We are the bromantic duo because we are two bros and our entire act is just bro. And we've done some great work, together. And his name is Ramin Charania, who is also a part of creating him. But I have a duo with him. That's one. Then there's this online stuff that has happened with David Riley Pustanski for creating Extreme Humor. I have another show with, I don't know if you know her, her name is Elke Reed. So her name is Elke Reed. I'm also in a duo with her. And since her name is Elke, she wanted her name to rhyme with mine. So she started calling me, "Hey, Asadi." So our show is called the Elke and Asadi Show. That's what we do. And we perform every week. So that's what happens. And I've also created this World of Improv. So I have this project called the World of Improv, where it is basically creating humor is a curated show, basically. So the World of Improv is just a bunch of curated shows that happen online, and it features the absolute best people that we all have connected with. And for the first show, we had around 24 improvisers, and there were like four shows of six people each, and all these big names in the world of improv that you have, you know, known in the last year. And they were all streaming, and such wonderful formats were created by each individual team. And each team was led by a team captain who was the coach and who was, you know, directing the whole thing. So six people, it was World of Improv, four shows. And then we advanced and expanded to more people, around 45 people for the next set of shows. There were six shows this time, all great formats. All great work that was being done. So many people being helpful. And the commitment was that, okay, you are being put in this team. And I was the one curating the teams because I love doing that kind of stuff. I love people. I love putting people together. And that's when it happened for the World of Improv with Laura Hughes. I sort of, you know, put her in a team with five other wonderful ladies, and their show is called Don't Mess, because why would anybody want to mess with, you know, women? I would never do that. So their show is called Don't Mess, and they are such lovely people, and they have actually expanded. They've now become a team of nine people, and it makes my heart so happy just to know that I was the one who just lit the fire, and now they are taking it to the next level. And it makes me genuinely happy that I helped them, you know, get there. It's fascinating to me what the amount of great work that these phenomenal women have been doing. It's so great to watch them perform.
That's so great. That's so wonderful. What a great series of opportunities that you've both had for yourself and also provided for other people. That's so amazing. I'm honored to be able to chat with you. I mean, and to hear about all this great work that you're doing right now. Thank you for being on the podcast. It has been a total pleasure to chat with you and to share all these stories. You have been a great guest. And, I hope when people are listening to this, they are inspired to investigate all sorts of global improv things, because there's so much awesome stuff out there.
It's pretty crazy, you know, what's out there. Just people, just, you know, just a little message to the audiences: give improv a chance, watch improv shows, just do that. Just watch a live stream if you want to. If you've never watched improv, don't watch online improv. Just go to a real world show where real improv is happening. And once you have watched improv and you know a few things about it, just watch online improv, watch the stream. It's just fascinating. It's incredible how great improv can be. Just give us a chance, basically. That's what I'm asking.
Give us a chance. Just give us a chance.
Yeah. We're waiting here for you to come to our shows.
Asad, I feel like at this point in this conversation, if people are listening this far into the interview, they love improv. They're deeply in love with improv. So don't worry. We're preaching to the choir right now.
I did give a shout out to a lot of people. I'm sorry if I missed a lot of people. I'm pretty sure I missed so many different people that I want to give a shout out to. I'm in a brain freeze right now. But I would definitely, you know, just beyond all the stuff that's out there, I just want to specifically take 1 minute to talk about, you know, all the great people that have done great things for the scene in India. Okay, right now I want to give big shout outs to Kevalya Plays. It is a New Delhi based you know, company, theater company, and the director is Varun Anand, and Gaurav Singh Nijjar, and all these great people doing such great work for the Indian improv scene, and it's sad that they do not get noticed. I would say that I have not done anything for the, I have definitely not done anything, not even close as to the things that, you know, Kevalya Plays has done. So big shout out to Peter, you know, Kevalya Plays. And the world, it was the world, and then we came to India, and then I'm you know, just coming back to my own city of Mumbai. I want to give big shout outs to Improv Comedy Mumbai. I love those people. I want to give big shout outs to Mischief in Action. I want to give big shout outs to Gavin Metalaka, who was the guy who told me bring out characters, and I have not stopped since then. Sir, if you're listening to this by any means, please know that I am eternally grateful that you planted that idea in my hand. People want to see characters, and since then I have never been myself on stage. I have never been Asad. You know, when people are watching me perform, they would see the character. If I'm playing the character of a king, they would legitimately see a king. If they are seeing a French king, they would see a French king, because that's what I want to do. I don't want to be myself. So yeah, thank you, Gavin sir. Yeah, people in India, Preeti Singh of, you know, Lemon Improv Theatre, and, you know, Comedy Incorporated, and 1-to-1 Comedy. That's my scene in Mumbai. And I'm so proud of the scene. And Kanish Surka, of course. Let's not forget Kanish Surka. She has also been performing improv and extra medium improv. And most importantly, I would like to give a shout out to Nair and Nasir. You know, Rohit Nair and Nasir Engineer, the duo, the great duo from, you know, Mumbai, the greatest two people that I know in my entire life. Yeah, that's about the entire scene in my city. And don't forget Creating Humor, and don't forget the Bromantic Tour, because we are also from Mumbai. Yeah, okay. Yay! Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, Amy, for letting me, you know, do blabber away like that, because I really wanted to put everything in there. Yeah. Thank you so much, Amy, for having me on this podcast. It was so much fun having such great detailed conversations with you. And this is an excellent podcast that you are running. Yes, but why? It speaks everything about improv.
Speaks
everything. Once you find the why, you have found everything. That's one teacher that told me. And that teacher is Will Hines. Will Hines told me that. Once you find the why, you'll find everything.
Ooh.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com, or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.